I'm giving a voice to patient. I'm giving a voice to those who need it and helping them save their life. So that's my mission. That's what makes me tick.
Okay, we are recording. This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today is Zvia Bader from Trajectory. And Zvia was nominated by Noam, right?
Exactly.
Thank you, Noam, because we've been talking probably for about 20 minutes before this, which we should have recorded. So first off, I'd like to ask you about the work that you're doing with Trajectory. Tell me about Trajectory and what problem you're solving.
Cool. So Trajectory is an AI-based decision support platform that basically aims to help cancer patients identify their treatment option. Now, God forbid you get cancer, and unfortunately, the world is divided, those who already got it and those who are about to get it. It's 1 out of 4, guys. So unfortunately, that's the statistic. We're all thinking COVID-19 all the time, but we need to think about something a little bit more dangerous and scary. But when you get a diagnosis to cancer, think about it. How would you know what treatment option, what to do? There is one challenge of information, and that's your oncologist. And that's weird because everything else in life, we have so many options and we validate our option, right? We want to book a flight. We'll go to kayak. We want to buy a house. We'll look at Zillow at our option. We don't just trust our agent, right? Why the hell in the journey and the fight for our life, we only count on our oncologist? And by no means downsizing the oncologist's importance, but when you think about it, he's limited by the amount of information that he can be familiar with. So with the amount of research and changes in the world of cancer care, how can we expect one human being to know all the options? And it's impossible. And I don't even go to
there's no way, about, right? It's such a complex thing. And, you know, number one, people are under major stress at that point.
Exactly.
And then you're hoping that you got the right doctor.
And exactly. And also that he remembers exactly every details about your medical condition.
Which he doesn't,
because he's got like 200 active patients. He has 10 minutes with you. And then treatment today goes to more and more toward personalized, which means more attributes come into play in the matching game between a treatment and a patient. So he needs to remember all the attributes of the treatment and who is that best fitted for. It's an impossible task. And I'm not going to even go about, you know, some doctors also has an agenda, relationship with pharmaceutical, their own, it's a business for them.
That is something that in itself is a huge, unfortunate conversation to have at some point, because it really definitely affects how, not just in that space, but it's a good.
In every space. Exactly. So the only way to basically, if you're fighting for your life, you need to advocate to yourself. You cannot outsource that. And the only way to do it is if you know your option. If you know your option, you can have a discussion with your oncologist and then make decisions that are right for you. But it comes out of a place of empowerment, not out of a place of no power. And as a patient, in order to be empowered, you have to know what's available and what's out there. And it's a complicated task because, A, like we said, there's a lot of it. It's all in a language that we common people don't understand, in the medical language. And there's a lot of attributes that come into play, a lot of criteria that comes into play, from biomarkers, genetic mutation, type of disease, size of disease, treatment, outcome. So there's a lot of things that come into play. So, but when you think about it from our point of view, like techies, that's exactly what good AI solution can do. It can read through data of treatment. It can take a lot of attributes and it can organize them and then match them. So, you know, no AI can make a decision or know exactly what's right for you, but going through the databases, extracting the information, then matching it to your set of attributes is something that a smart, you know, machine learning solution can do. So that's what we do.
So the platform that you've built is almost like an AI-driven kind of an Airbnb for cancer treatments. Is that?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Oh. That's a good description. So basically, we are connecting to the FDA database of treatment. We develop our own proprietary unsupervised NLP because, again, you need to understand the context. You need to understand terms that do not exist in existing taxonomy. Then you need to structure them, cluster them. So we do all that at the back end. And then we let a patient come in. tell us about himself in a smart questionnaire that, again, is dynamic. So based on the input, that's what determines the flow of the other question and the other data set that we collect. And then we basically match between a patient and a treatment. And we present to him, like Airbnb, on a map. So we filter by location, but that's a nice to have. So we first match him with treatment option for him. We then let him filter by the location. And then we take it to the next step. So do we do two things. We curate the information. So again, our language is different. So the fact that a treatment or a clinical trials have a very complex name doesn't mean that I'll understand it. So we curate it to terms that a patient understands. We present to him the information that is important to him, how a treatment is being given, what is the expected outcome. We take it to the next level, which sort of said, if you need more help, we want to empower basically by knowledge. So we to give you the learn more, you can read about the treatment. What was it tested for? What was the outcome? Everything the industry knows about it, we kind of present it in a patient-friendly manner. And we also do what I call the last mile as a service. We let a patient the option to talk to one of our experts that will explain it to him. So we don't give medical advice. That you do with your oncologist. But we educate you. We give you the information you need to know to better understand your option.
So, I mean, it's a phenomenal platform, first of all, what you described. How long has it been in production? Like how many people have been through it? And
So we've been live for a year and a bit, I'll say. The way we work is we train the machine indication by indication, cancer type by cancer type. So we started with an MVP that was one cancer type, melanoma. We then added CRC, breast cancer. Now we have 9 cancer type already alive in our platform. And the end of June, we're actually going to get, it's a huge milestone. We're going to include lung cancer, which not only will be a number 10, but will also mean we cover 50% of the cancer patient population.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. So over the year that we've been live, we've already had over 3,500 patients that have used our platform. And because now we have large set of data, what we've just launched is what we call a treatment finder. So we want to bring this, so not only show you the clinical trials option based on the FDA database, we actually let you see other patients' journey. So if you think about it, we use a lot that we are looking a lot for the community know-how, right? What are others doing? What are others received? And, you know, use forum, use Facebook group, but then it's like coincidental. Who sees your answer? Is he really like you in terms of your medical condition? You don't know it. So what we do is we take all this, we aggregate the real-world data that we have, and we present it to a patient. So patient that is like you, really like you, subtype, genetic mutation, all of it, those are the treatment they received, and this is the reported outcome. So all of a sudden you can see, okay, they received this drug that my oncologist said, but 45% of them reported that they had a disease progression with it. So now, okay, let's have the discussion with the doctor about the efficiency of this drug. And then I can look at clinical trials, and I can look, that is also a very good option, and now the most recommended to patients with cancer. So all of a sudden, we're mapping the option. We're letting you see what others' journey looks like. So you can make educated decision for yourself and be empowered to own it.
Are doctors using similar tools?
No, unfortunately not. So we're offering that as a tool for doctors and their patients. And that's the problem. What they have is they have this PDF of what's being approved by the FDA. And it's very flat, like, decision-making tree. If you had this, do that. If you had that, do that. But again, it doesn't cover all options. It doesn't cover clinical trials, which is right now the best of option. It's not a good option right now for doctors. That's why they can't keep up. And also they don't have an option to see other patients and the outcome in an aggregated manner. So we want to democratize this world both for patients and oncologists. I think this way they can both do a better job. I lost you.
My volume went off. I had like a phone ring and someone pop up at the same time. And neither one of us. So it's pretty phenomenal that first of all, that doctors are just going by like an old school methodology to do this.
This entire industry is old school because it's so complex. Listen, it took us a really long time to build this engine. And as I told you, we're doing it indication by indication. It's complex. It's not simple. And if it was easy, it was done before, right? But the whole health industry is really old fashioned compared to what we know from other industry.
Do you think this will lead to, I mean, obviously this is a tool for patients. It sounds like it would be a useful decision support tool for doctors. Do you think this will lead to more automated treatment methods, or what are you thinking where the roadmap goes?
I think so. I think it will lead to a more educated decision, because I think if we start aggregating this data, we can start making better prediction about a patient. And make smarter decision about his journey. So, you know, based on what we see from the data, based on of all the options that are relevant to him, let more likely is than not to respond to this type of treatment. So you can automate some of the decision making about treatment only once you collect enough data set and only if all the options are there to begin with. Unfortunately, so much of the discussion today goes to what's the option, that you sort of like hang out to the first option or the most known one or common one and use that and doesn't have anything to be useful for a predictive model. Real world data is not that easily available. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you have to be like anything else in life. And I think us as software people understand that you have to be agile and you have to be flexible. And you have to be able to change quickly if things doesn't work. And I think having this pool of option always available for you always also make it the quality of care better, because you can make quick decision and make quick changes when needed.
It's so I had this thing in my head where, you know, we have certain bottlenecks in medicine, right? Obviously there's like legacy and the training of doctors and the number of doctors. I mean, it's a very long, arduous process to become a doctor. And I guess, you know, the thing in my head is, if that was no longer a choke point, how would you accomplish it? And it feels like it's almost like an AI that, like, why couldn't an AI do what you're doing, but for every type of treatment and get you to that certain point? And maybe there's a final decision made by doctors, but wouldn't they be make number one, they're already making ridiculously fast decisions, right? So they're using, you know, their brain, which is a, you know, dinosaur brain to process what information is coming at them, right? Which are these reports. But do you see where this would like eliminate those bottlenecks? And maybe again, the final decision's human, but, you know, and then the other thing that came to mind, now I'll think about after, like, would that not eliminate that bottleneck and improve the outcomes?
So I think it will. So I think exactly that. I do believe that the decision is human at the end of the day. I don't think any machine can take into account the complex decision-making process itself. And so many things come into play when it's making decision. When it comes to treatment, do you want to start aggressive, not aggressive? How much mentally you are capable of tolerating a specific treatment or duration of a treatment right now? There's a lot of things that also are not clear just from data, and human mind can take them into calculation and make that decision. But I think the bottlenecks are being solved if we don't expect them to be the source of knowledge as well. They can't be the entire Wikipedia of the medical world, right? And make the smart decision.
That's what I'm thinking, focus, right?
Yeah, let them focus on making the smart decision, and you bring the wiki to them the same way we've done in every, if you think about every other profession. We've solved the bottlenecks by creating not smart databases, but creating smart decision support tools that bring you the right information, the right BI information at the right time. And then what's left for you is to make the smart decision about it. And I think if we do that and we let doctor focused and then they can focus about the quality of their care. And if they focus about the quality of their care, their outcome should be better.
Because I think the other thing that's interesting is like, okay, you get to that point. Why do I have to go to a hospital? Why am I going to this hot box for everything?
Yeah, exactly. And thinking about it in COVID-19 days, why? So a lot of things, I think a lot of what we've learned in this situation is that we need to access to resources and information is key. So all of this dialogue can take place anywhere, can take place remotely. And then once that decision made, now I know where I want to go to, where do I need to go to get a specific treatment. But all the decision about the treatment can be done remotely. And then it's not that I go and start wherever it's closest or where or further, if there's no point. I'll go to a designated destination to receive a specific already pinpoint treatment.
And that just that sort of medicine where you are and diagnosis where you are, I think would, you know, we're still operating in this like hundreds and hundreds of year old model for, well, healthcare in a sense. Like, yes, there's all these technologies and drugs and everything else. Cellular treatments are coming, but it's like the bottleneck remains like this building, this person.
Exactly.
And then,
exactly,
you know, the filter for the information is that person and a reptile brain and stress and everything else, right?
Yeah. When you think about it, the principle of the way we practice medicine have not changed. It's one-to-one relationship. It's a patient with one doctor at one facility. And that's not sustainable. I mean, the whole reason we're all locked in our houses for so long is not because of COVID-19, is because we knew the system cannot tolerate so many patients at the same time, right?
Which is crazy. That's what I think really pushed me to think about it, right? When they were saying that, I'm like, this is ridiculous.
But that's the reality.
Well, it doesn't, isn't it? That's what we got to get to. Is that
that's where we need to get to.
We need someone, and I don't think it's government. Someone like you and other entrepreneurs need to have this alternative vision. And I think there's two things that it offers. One, better outcomes and treatment. Two, cheaper, because, you know, where's the expense?
Yeah, there is less time that needs to be spent on the less important things.
I don't have to, you know, could I not have a digital pre-check-in doctor that's influenced by this AI or other AIs like that?
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, how many of them do I need? They don't have to go through 10, 15 years of education. It's an avatar to me that asks. The other thing you mentioned was NLP, right? And in your case, NLP is natural language processing. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. And we use an unsupervised one. So it's a unique, more sophisticated use case of the NLP.
So just to explain what that is, like, how does that play into what you're doing?
So if you think about what's NLP, natural language processing, is the ability of a machine to read through a text.
Right.
And the way it does it, usually it's being built on existing taxonomy. So existing dictionaries that are looking for a specific term in a text. The reason it's not sufficient enough or good enough in the world of health is because a lot of those terms does not exist in dictionaries. Especially when we look at clinical trials, those are new innovative research terms that pop up and does not exist there. The other thing that is critical is you need to understand context. What are we using that as a name of a drug, as a biomarker, genetic mutation, inclusion or exclusion? There are so many things that comes into play. So your machine has to be smarter, meaning it has to be unsupervised. It's identifying the terms from the context of the entire sentence. That's the idea behind it. So mimic the mind of an oncologist, if you like, when reading it through a treatment protocol.
So what that's allowing you to do is take the language of medicine and come out with the right answer in this case.
Yeah.
Right. And then the flip side is taking, there would probably be a different use of NLP if it was actually communicating with someone, which would be taking your language to figure out how it matches with this data.
Exactly.
Okay, but you're only doing one side of that right now.
We're doing two sides. So we do three sides. We take the data. We then, based on what we've done with it, analyze and structure it. We ask you set of question and dynamic set of questions to identify who you are, who's the patient, what's their profile, and then we match them. So we do match them to that treatment, and then based on the treatment we match, we also curate it. So we take the preset and we not dumb it, but actually translate it to a more patient language than the research and medical language.
Amazing. Okay, so you are. Yeah, that totally makes sense. Like, you have to have both sides in order to come to some solution, right?
Exactly.
It's still applicable. Like, the bridge between that and what I'm talking about is very small.
It's getting smaller. Still a bridge, unfortunately, but we're on our, at least we're on the right path towards it.
So. Yeah, oh, totally. Like I can see where in 10 years, this is like a different, you know, potentially, even if it's just, you know, people that understand this and have access to it, like it eliminates the barriers of access, I think, potentially.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because any, like, there's no, what's the limit of you giving people access to this?
There's no limit. It's just a matter of, we train the machine indication by indication. Yeah, but there is no limit. And our service is free for patients. So I think one of the most important things people need to understand, for the patient, it's free and it's always will be. So they can have access, they can empower themselves in making the right decision and owning their journey.
Wow, that's incredible. So I go very quickly from healthcare to education. I know it's not your field, but wouldn't the same logic and the ability apply to teaching people? Like, and I say teaching people like kids. Like, I think we fight this reality, I keep telling people, and I think they're thinking in very simple terms. We fight this reality that kids are learning from YouTube and they're learning from Twitch, for example. And then we get them in these old school, 1,000-year-old model schools, and it's not one-to-one, it's not customized, there's no assessment. And then they're like, oh, they can't pay attention. Like, well, why would they want to? You're slow and they know more than you.
Yeah.
So could this not, and I believe the answer is yes, but could this same approach not apply to education, where I can have a digital teacher that has personality, has knowledge, and is assessing how I learn?
Completely. And I think, again, if we change, like we said, if we take the oncologist and we make him not the know-it-all, but actually the smart tool, the coacher for me in decision making, same goes. The teacher should become the coacher. Mm-hmm. They can work about the skill, the emotional intelligence, the learning comprehension, the skill, but the actual obtaining knowledge and validating that we obtain the knowledge and got the logic and know how to do the right math or get the logic of the science, that can all be automated and turn into a self also quest. I think one of the things kids have to learn is the ability to do it themselves, search for the information themselves, right. Comprehend it themselves.
That's what they're doing already on their own.
They're doing it already. And we're trying to skill for life.
I say exactly. What else is.
No, but how do we teach ourselves? What's the difference between us and them? When I needed to learn Python, which, you know, did not exist when I was in college, mm-hmm. right? I went online. I found some YouTube. I found some online courses. I played with it. I figured it out. That's the way I learn new skill. It's not like we stop evolving as adults. We just teach ourselves. That skill is what we need to teach our kids. That's the way they're going to learn. Why should it be any different?
Well, I think the reality is they are, and you have.
And we're not exactly. And we're not a clone. And we are not acknowledging it.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that really pushes the button now is all these kids are at home. And you're seeing what your kids are learning. Now, parents are not equipped to deal with, hey, you're here all the time. But they're also, so the ones that are observant are hopefully seeing what their kids are learning. If you ask a kid, I don't know if you have kids or not, but you're a lifer. There you go. If you ask a kid, what'd you learn at school today? What do they tell you?
Not much.
Nothing. We say that word, nothing. They tell you. They're not lying to you, right?
No. Yeah, I always thought they're lying, but no, they're not. No, but then when they're at home, it's like cool. They do this project, and then I force them. They're like, Mom, I don't get it. I said, okay, so let's go. I don't know it. Let's look at Google. Let's find the research. Let's think how we find the answer. I'm not your answer. What do I know? And all of a sudden, we do this quest together.
I think that what would prevent us, and someone's got to be working on this, and I think I know someone that might, that I got to figure out how to get in touch with, because I saw something, but what is preventing us from having the most encouraging and tailored teacher for every single student in the world? And what you're telling me is nothing, because this could be the pathway.
I think that's the path. I think that's where we will end up, in a good way. I think people are afraid of AI, they don't understand what it means that it will replace you, and it never will replace us.
Right.
Never. It will just assist us at what is less important. It will assist us to overcome the amount of data that needs processing. It will do all the legwork for us, get all the relevant data, process it, give it to us, and then we can do what humans do best, implement it, make decision about it, modify it, evolve it, we'll take it to the next level. And that's the whole idea.
I don't know if you watched the Joe Rogan podcast ever, but did you see the most recent one with Elon Musk where he basically talked about Neuralink the whole time?
No, I didn't see that one. I usually watch him. I missed that one. I'll get a little...
I mean, first of all, you might be a little, you know, you're in the space, so you probably will just be like, yeah, that's possible, totally. But, you know, Neuralink is his startup that people don't realize is a thing where they're putting chips in the brain.
And in the brain, yeah. Brain,
and they're mapping the spinal column, like all the nervous system, so that they can repair it, right? But then beyond repair, what he talks about is that we have a, what do they call it? An interface problem, where AI wants a conversation. And pretty soon, though, the AI is so advanced that it doesn't want to talk to the tree, but you're the tree. So the way he describes it made sense when he said that, which is, well, what if your interface problem is typing and talking? It's too slow, right? It's too inefficient. Yeah. Whereas if I put it in here, the brain-computer interface changes all that.
I want one,
but it's really fascinating. You see what he's
talking. It's fascinating, etc. Do we want to go that? Do we need to be as evolved? I'm not convinced yet, but there's no doubt that, you know, our vehicle is not serving our brain the most of way, but that's also okay to slow down sometimes.
Yeah, true. I think we got a lesson in that.
Exactly.
Maybe not
recently.
Zvi, I want to be conscious of your time. I really am excited. I'm glad Noam. I owe Noam a high five for nominating you as a guest. So I'm really
thank excited. You. I really enjoyed it.
I want to invite you back anytime because there's so many other topics we could talk about, and I kind of geek out on this. So if you ever want to talk, I'm always happy to do that, whether it's on podcast or not.
Fair enough. As you can see, I'm a geeky. We can talk about those things for hours. I love it. Well, so thank you so much for having me.
Oh, of course. Okay, so I want to acknowledge the work you're doing because it's phenomenal. I'm really excited about it.
Thank you.
I'm going to wrap with a couple quick things. First is rapid fire questions. The first one is, if you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with, who are the five people you spend the most time with?
After 3 months at home locked with my dogs and my kids, what can I say?
It's like them.
The answer. Yeah, exactly. Not a good answer.
I think I know the answer to this one, but how are you, Zvia, changing the world?
I'm giving a voice to patients. I'm giving a voice to those who need it and helping them save their life. So that's my mission. That's what makes me tick.
I love it. How do people get in touch with you?
Zvia@trajectory.com is the best of ways.
Perfect. And it's,
you can do social media, but I'm not a big fan lately. So
yeah, who is, right?
Exactly.
And it's TZIVA?
TZVIA@trajectory.com. And if not, find me on LinkedIn, TZVIA Bader. That's still a platform I appreciate.
Perfect. Okay. So the final thing is, when we have interesting guests on the podcast, as you know, we like you to nominate another interesting guest. We usually talk to experts or entrepreneurs. A lot of what we talk about is about automation and technology, but it doesn't have to be. So who would you like to nominate as a future guest of Automate and Grow?
Let me think about it.
And who's the first person that pops to your mind? Because that's usually
the first person that pops into my mind is a dude by the name of Zor, who did a very exciting thing. A company that he had to close recently, which I think is a huge shame. That called Token, that was about giving us virtual credit card to prevent fraud and protect our asset better, and for us not to lose our mind every time we lose our wallet or someone steal our credit card's numbers. So it had a very interesting solution for that. And I think also that's Zor. I'll get you in touch with him. So I think about talking about fintech and what we do with digital money and how we manage our financial online and also protect our asset online from financial point of view is an interesting topic to discuss with him.
Absolutely. Okay, Zora, you've been nominated as a future guest. We will accept that and follow up to get in touch with you. The gardeners are here, so we're probably hearing some gardening noise in the background. But this has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast with my phenomenal guests. We will see you on the next episode of Automate and Grow.